Hello and welcome to episode 60 of A Little Bird Told Me, the podcast where two freelance writers tell you all the tricks of the trade. We talk about the highs, the lows and the no-nos of successful self-employment, saving you from mighty embarrassment and mortifying mistakes and guiding you to the very top of your chosen profession. Freelancing can be amazing, but that doesn't mean it's easy. Tune in to this podcast every week, and if you go to alittlebirdtoldme.podomatic.com, you can subscribe there to ensure that you never miss an episode. Whether iTunes, an RSS podcatcher, or Stitcher Smart Radio are your platform of choice, we've made it super easy to sign up, so you can be the first to hear our latest words of wisdom. There you will also find any links that we mention in the podcast, links to our own websites and social media feeds, and to the A Little Bird Told Me Facebook page too. I am Philippa Willits.
And I am Laurie Hartson, and today we're going to be talking about how to deal with clients who are chauvinist and or patronising to you. So horrible clients who talk down to you and may be trying to degrade you.
Indeed.
Now, freelance writing can be hard enough without having clients trying to undermine you with negative behaviour. And sadly, you can't control how other people treat you, at least not directly. What you can do, though, is learn certain ways of responding to behaviour that is damaging that will help to nip the issue in the bud, or may help to nip this issue in the bud. It's also worth assessing your own overall demeanour to see if there's anything you can do to prevent clients trying this kind of stuff on with you in the first place.
There are things that you simply don't have to put up with, but we can often find ourselves blaming ourselves or just think it's part and parcel of the job. You don't have to put up with it, and it isn't part of the job.
No, and to be clear, it is never your fault if someone else chooses to act unprofessionally. You are not responsible for their behaviour. As I say, you're only responsible for your own, and you're not responsible for changing someone else's behaviour. But to get along in business, and for the sake of your own health and well-being, it is good to have some strategies that may at least help to minimise the effect of patronising people's actions on your sense of self. Now, as Pip says, it can be just part and parcel of the job. We've all had to deal with horrible people. And our hope with this podcast is not just to give you some tips and tricks to try and cope with this and to try and manage a situation like that, but also to let you know that you're not on your own.
Definitely.
Now, typically patronising or condescending people tend to latch onto individuals that they perceive as being easy to victimise. Now, this might be because of something they see or they think they see in their target's personality, or it may be chauvinist behaviour, which is based on like cultural or societal assumptions they have, for example, seeing women as less capable. So what we're going to do in this episode is look at just a few ways that condescending people operate and explore some of the ways that you can learn to cope just a little bit better with that. So before we really get started on the topic, I just want to sort of interject with a little word of warning, which is that it's important to remember that the person being condescending or patronising or chauvinist may not actually realise that they're being that way to you. They may not realise that they're being offensive to you.
Yeah, some people genuinely think they're being helpful, but it can come across as very kind of this weird paternalistic thing, and the kind of underlying sense is that they don't take you seriously. However, that's not their intention. They just think they're being super nice.
Yeah, I mean, there's that saying, isn't there? Intention is irrelevant. So, you know, it's so worth bearing in mind that it might not be their intention, but it doesn't make it okay.
Definitely.
That being said, though, it is worth taking a gentle stand before you go in with I'm thinking about that scene in The Matrix where they turn up just absolutely loaded to the ears with guns. And although that can feel like a really good approach sometimes when you've had it up to your ears with a patronising client, it's not the best way to start out.
No, that's the guns are a last resort.
Thank you, Philippa. I think they are.
That's my word of wisdom for the world.
Try words before guns. That's our words of wisdom. I think we could just stop the podcast there.
There we are.
Now, it can be difficult to want to give clients the benefit of the doubt sometimes, particularly, I find, as freelance troubles tend to come along in clumps. They're like buses. They all come along at once.
That is true.
You might be reaching the end of your tether with a few people at the same time, particularly if you work for a large number of clients or if you work with a large number of people in the same client company. But you have to treat everybody fairly, if only for the sake of your business and professional. And you have to make sure that you're not taking out your frustration with something or someone else on the person that you're dealing with. You know, sometimes I will have had a bad week or more often a bad month. And I'll find myself being like, right, that's it. I've had enough, zero tolerance, no more. But then I have to really be careful that the next client who comes along and maybe puts their foot in it a little bit and says something unfortunate doesn't get shot on sight.
And this happens in life as well. You might have been in a busy city centre on a Saturday afternoon and your patience has worn thin.
I
and then
hate that.
Yeah, and then one person bumps into you, for instance, and they get it all, you know. What do you think you're doing? How dare you? And it's not about the person who bumped into you. It's about the build-up of generalised rubbish.
So, when a client is patronising or condescending towards you, it can be tempting to just get in there and stick up for yourself, particularly if you feel like you've been treated or feeling like you've allowed yourself to be treated poorly in the past. And I say feeling like you've allowed yourself to be treated poorly. Of course, it's not your fault if people treat you badly. But sometimes we can take it on ourselves and really feel like, oh, why did I let him speak to me that way? Why did I let her do that? Mm. And it can really fester. But as I say, the client you're dealing with at that time may not realise. They might think, and I think this applies in a really sadly large number of cases, that they're being funny or controversial or edgy.
Yeah.
Yeah, Pip knows exactly what I'm talking
about. I know this well, yes.
Or they might just be having a bad day or week and be responding to that by talking down to you in a bid to kind of buoy themselves up. And it's not okay, but it's not necessarily malicious or personal to you.
Yeah.
So rather than like retaliating with rude remarks, it is important to take the opportunity to approach these things carefully. And if you need to, implement some changes.
So some examples of the kind of situations this can occur. In my experience, the worst experiences I've had in terms of being patronised have been at in-person networking events.
Okay.
Those kind of organised business networking, which feel very much like an old boys club in many ways. I've turned up to these events and they are generally very male-dominated, with older men who've known each other for years and pat each other on the back a lot. And I turn up as a new woman on the scene. And generally, I chat to people, but I always have an underlying sense that I'm almost being patted on the head, really.
Mm-hmm. Like, oh, how sweet, she's attended a networking event.
Yeah, well done her. But
it's difficult, isn't it? Because assertive patterns of behaviour in men are often viewed as strident or shrill in women.
Mm.
You know, if you put yourself forward, you can often be seen as being too ballsy.
Yeah, definitely. Another occasion where I've encountered it, and I suspect Laurie has as well, because we both, for a certain amount of our work, do work in areas that could be classed as typically male-dominated.
Definitely.
Laurie does a lot of copywriting for kind of industrial-type sectors. I do a lot for tech companies and websites. And both of those, you know, are overwhelmingly men in many ways.
Mm.
And so in early contact with clients when they don't know us, I think it can be harder for the person I'm talking to take seriously that my gentle female brain could possibly understand all that computery stuff.
Yeah, I think with a lot of the clients that I work with, the only women in the company are either support staff or reception staff.
Yeah.
Or canteen staff. So I'll often find that people, I'll say people, I often find that men in these companies have a slight expectation that I will support them in their work and in their goal. I've had people asking me to print them out Google Maps.
Yeah.
I've had people asking me to make them a coffee.
Yeah.
Wow.
I've had people ask me to Google things for them. In the time you said, please could you Google this, you could have Googled it.
Mm-hmm. No, it's pretty outrageous. I mean, I worked in-house somewhere and I had somebody asking me whether I would give them directions over the phone while they were driving. So whether
that's what you're there for.
Absolutely. As you know, marketing and content production person, that's absolutely my job. Asking me to write emails for them. So basically secretarial work.
Yes.
Admin work. And it's all friendly until you say no.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which point there's very much this attitude that you're too big for your boots or that you don't know your place or...
Yeah, which is very similar to what Laurie was saying earlier about these behaviours that are accepted within men and even seen as positives.
Mm-hmm.
When a woman does it, can be taken as being uppity.
Yeah. I'm going to give an example later in this podcast as we talk more in depth on this, about just how negatively it can be taken when you do assert yourself.
Yeah.
And we're just going to give those examples so that you know that if you get in the situation and you find that you're being treated like a pariah and like you've done something really, really socially awkward, you may well not have. You may just be asserting yourself in a situation where people aren't comfortable with that.
Yeah. So these kinds of situations where we might find ourselves patronized or dealing with outright sexism, we've mentioned networking events and new clients, but they really can occur in all, you know, a really wide range mm-hmm. of situations. And so what we're going to look at now is some of the specific behaviours that you might want to look out for.
Absolutely, because being patronised is sometimes quite hard to spot. You can sort of think, well, I'm not comfortable with this. Why am I feeling this way?
Yeah, or is this just his personality or her personality?
Mm-hmm. Or is it just a tone thing? Did I take that the wrong way? Is a very common thing. And the problem with did I take that the wrong way? Am I being oversensitive? Is that is the very nature of some people's condescending behaviour. They will do things to undermine you in a way that leaves them open to say, you're just taking it the wrong way. You're just doing this. You're just doing that. Which is called gaslighting. So gaslighting, it's quite a difficult concept to describe sometimes. So we've pulled up the Wikipedia on that, and it describes it in terms that you might think, oh, steady on, you know, that's a bit much. But it says gaslighting is a form of mental abuse in which false information is presented with the intent of making a victim doubt his or her own memory, perception and sanity. Instances may range simply from the denial by an abuser that a previous incident has ever occurred, up to the staging of bizarre events by the abuser with the intention of disorientating the victim. The term gaslighting comes from the play Gaslight and its film adaptations, and it's now also used in clinical and research literature. So basically, gaslighting is denying that something happened or happened in the way that you perceive that it happened, and setting situations to be able to do that.
Yeah, so something might happen that feels inappropriate to you, but then if you bring it up at a later point, you might be made to feel like you're being ridiculous, or you might even, you know, be convinced, you know, they could convince you that it didn't happen the way you remember it.
Or that it didn't happen at all.
Indeed, and that they're all examples of gaslighting. And once you know the concept, I find it very easy to spot. It's difficult to explain, as Laurie said, but once you are aware of it, it becomes quite visible to you.
So gaslighting is just one of the ways that people can undermine you. If you feel like you're being treated badly, it's important to start trying to get examples of the objectionable behaviour so that you can bring it up and say, no, on this date, at this time, such and such happened. In this email, see attached, you said such and so.
Yeah.
Then in this email later, you said that you'd never said it.
Yeah.
You know, if you find concrete examples, it's good for your own mental state, to be honest, because being gaslighted is something that typically happens to women. I'm not going to say it doesn't happen to men.
Yeah.
But it's something that typically women tend to be a bit more vulnerable to, I find.
Yeah.
Because we're taught not to be confrontational. We're taught to be agreeable.
And I think that applies to everything we've said and we're going to say, actually, that what we're talking about is things that do typically happen to women. And that's not to say that it doesn't happen to men. And there will be men listening to this who can relate to everything we're talking about.
And that doesn't make you less manly.
Exactly.
It just means that you're in a smaller number, probably.
Yes, exactly. Now, another example of the kind of behaviour you need to look out for is simply your knowledge and experience not being taken seriously. If you find that there are insinuations that you don't know what you're talking about, or if you're perhaps getting work that you know you could be doing more detailed, better work for them, but they're giving you very, very simple tasks, or simply that somebody doesn't believe that you're capable of doing what you say you're doing, that is something to look out for, and it can be very common, especially in male-dominated sectors.
Very much so, and that can extend to micromanaging, which is a more active form of this kind of undermining, I would say.
Yeah.
If you find that your work is coming back with tiny, tiny little amends and tiny, tiny little changes, and could you check this, and could you check the comma in the seventh sentence, and could you do this, and could you do that, and I'm not sure about this, I'm not sure about that, and could you let me know how you're getting on, and then 15 minutes later, could you please give me an update on how you're getting on? You know, I need to know where you're up to with this all the time, and you feel like somebody is piling on top of you. That can really start to damage not just your confidence, but your working relationship with that person.
Mm. Now, in a workplace I used to work in a salary position many years ago, the boss of the company was a full-on tyrant.
Mm-hmm.
He fired a woman for bringing him the wrong kind of coffee. I was a secretary receptionist there, and he fired my predecessor for putting a call through that he didn't want to take.
That's outrageous.
Yeah, and he was an absolute tyrant. He ran the entire business through fear, really. And thankfully, I was there on a temporary contract. I was covering until they replaced their poor secretary receptionist. So I could distance myself from it quite easily. I could think, you know, I'm here for 2 months. I can deal with it. But if that's your situation in your day-to-day life, and it doesn't have to be at a salary position, you know, these tyrant type people are present in every walk of life, and you may find you have a client who demands things be done in a certain way by using that kind of fear and aggression, and that's another behaviour that one's very easy to spot. You don't miss it because it's very much imposed, but it's another thing to look out for.
Definitely. And I think it's important to notice when it's happening to you rather than anybody else.
The final type of behaviour that we want to draw attention to is out and out sexual harassment. Now, this could also be a bit difficult to define. So I looked up what the Equality and Human Rights Commission has to say. And they define sexual harassment in two ways. One is unwanted conduct on the grounds of your sex, which is basically being treated badly because you are a woman. It might be being bullied at work, where the harasser wouldn't treat a man in the way they're treating you, or vice versa. This doesn't have to be a sexual, it doesn't have to take a sexual nature. It just has to be being treated badly on the grounds of your gender. The other type that's probably more well known is unwanted physical, verbal, or non-verbal conduct of a sexual nature. So this is against the law, in the UK at least, and that can include things like comments about the way you look, sexual or inappropriate remarks, questions about your sex life, or even demands of sexual behaviour. You know, I'll fire you if you don't do this, that or the other.
Mm-hmm.
It can also involve touching, physical kind of abuse, and any kind of physical threats are actually criminal offences. The thing, it has to be done legally. The conduct must be done with the purpose of or have the effect of violating your dignity or of creating an intimidating, hostile, degrading, humiliating or offensive environment for you. And so this is all about the things that make you feel uncomfortable. It's often not a blatant assault situation. Mm-hmm. It's often used in, you know, it's quite related to the gaslighting that we were talking about earlier.
It could be a saucy or sexist joke by email.
Yep, or having topless posters in the office. It can be all sorts of things. So you don't have to think, well, nobody's grabbed hold of my breasts, so it mustn't be sexual harassment. There's a wide, wide range of things that come under that umbrella, really.
Absolutely. If you feel in any way uncomfortable and you feel that this has anything to do with your gender, then it may be sexual harassment.
Yes.
It's just that simple.
Yeah, exactly. So we've outlined some of the situations that you might find yourself in. And so now we want to look at how to react to these kind of situations. Now, in terms of patronising clients, which I often get when I present myself as a writer with specialisms in tech and SEO and social media, my favourite way to react to them is simply to prove them wrong. If somebody doesn't believe that your fragile female brain could possibly handle writing that physics textbook or providing blog posts for a structural engineering website, then let your expertise shine. And the best way to do this is by showing rather than telling. Don't say, I know how to do this. Do it. Write what they want and do it exceptionally well. There is nothing I enjoy more than starting to work with somebody who's clearly concerned that my gender will make me a bad tech writer, and then witnessing them grudgingly start to accept that I know what I'm doing when I submit detailed work on EdgeRank or Google Authorship, and it's clear that I fully understand my subject. And interestingly, those people often end up being my biggest cheerleaders, funnily enough.
Yeah, it's a little bit sad, isn't it? It's good and bad in the same breath.
Mm.
When they start being your cheerleader, it's because they think you're something special. Like, oh, women are usually rubbish, but that's what I'm all about. It's like, oh, it's a long battle. But yes, thanks, I'm fine. and I find the same thing, you know, when I can handle writing about offshore wind farms and I can handle writing about waste management systems and civil engineering.
Yeah.
And I ask pertinent questions in business meetings when you've got other people sitting there like zombies.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm pulling up things that I don't have to pull up. You know, I'm asking about, well, what are we going to do about this legislation, or what's going to happen about this, or have you taken into account added social value on this front?
Yeah, and what are your key performance indicators?
Yeah.
You know, they kind of, you see jaws dropping and then, yeah.
Corporate social responsibility, anybody? You know, and it is enjoyable, but you shouldn't have to do it, should you? That's the sad thing about it.
No, absolutely.
So in terms of coping, we want to highlight a few direct coping methods and a few indirect coping methods. And what I mean by indirect coping methods are ways that you can try and strengthen yourself behind the scenes to be able to cope better with this if it occurs again in future.
Yeah.
And
indeed how to cope if it's happening now.
Well, true. Whereas the direct coping methods are to deal with a specific ongoing situation that you want to know how to handle.
Yeah.
Now, first off, with the direct coping methods, you can just let the snark slide and try and get what you can from the communication. So what I mean by that is that while passive, aggressive, patronising and condescending comments can make you really cross, and with good reason, if you want to continue a working relationship with that client, it's good to try and get what you can from the comments that they're making and ignore the crap, basically.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not a big fan of ignoring other people's bad behaviours, and so I wouldn't advocate this in the long term, but if it's a one-off thing, if you can distill the meaning from somebody's words, you may be able to just prompt that person to communicate in just a bit of a better, more appropriate way in future.
Yeah.
So if a client says to you, and this is an example I've seen online, that they know never to ask you for anything on a Friday because you never get it done until the following week, you can respond by asking a simple question about meaning. Now, they're clearly being passive-aggressive by voicing an opinion like that. So often patronizing people will, they'll actually be a little bit embarrassed if you act professionally in the face of their condescension. It gives them nowhere to go, and it gives you the comfort, although it might not feel like much comfort, of really inhabiting the moral high ground with them.
Yeah.
So if you've got a snarky client who makes a passive-aggressive dig about you not completing work that you receive on a Friday until the following week, you can respond with something along the lines of, you know, like with most businesses, I don't ordinarily work weekends and I charge extra if I do so. However, if you're saying to me that you need the work that you send to me on a Friday turned around within a few hours or returned to you by the Saturday or the Sunday, then you need to let me know.
Mm-hmm.
So that puts it back on them then.
Yeah, and sometimes, not always, you have to judge it carefully, but sometimes even a little bit of snark in response can help.
Absolutely.
Something like, oh, are you working this weekend? I know often places that ask writers to write for free, people often recommend replying with, oh, do you get paid?
Yeah.
And it's a similar thing. It's not always appropriate, but occasionally just that a short sentence like that can reframe it for the other person, who might then go, oh, no, I really like my weekends. There's no reason she wouldn't too.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, a little bit of gentle mockery can go a long way.
Yeah, absolutely. And if somebody's really, really difficult to work with, you can always approach somebody else in the business. Often they're superior. This is obviously assuming it's a small to medium size or larger business. If it's a one-off, like a one-man or one-woman operation, this isn't an option. But in most businesses, you might want to speak to the marketing manager or the PR director or even human resources, depending on who you know and the kind of role you place. But sometimes speaking to somebody superior can help to resolve a situation. And if somebody remains difficult to work with, you could even request a new contact in the same company.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because it's important to remember that in this particular podcast, we're not just talking about clients who are a pain in the bum.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about clients who are patronizing and chauvinist. So chauvinist is specifically referring to people who think that you are inferior to them because you are a member of a group that they find inferior. And often that's going to be women in this case. Often it may be because you're a person of color.
Mm-hmm.
It may be because you have a disability. It may be because you are gay or LGBT.
Yeah, there can be, all sorts of reasons. Or even a man who doesn't fit with typical masculine behaviour can find themselves victimised in a very similar way.
Absolutely. So these kinds of behaviours that we're talking about, we're not just talking about somebody being annoying.
No.
I think it's important to say that, you know, if we're going to talk about talking to somebody superior, you need to have gone through the other situations that we've discussed and get examples, get concrete examples of their behaviours and how that's objectionable to you.
Yeah. Now, if you're dealing with sexual harassment, as we described earlier, there is a website called The Muse, and they have outlined some pretty sensible advice.
Okay.
Now, there are things, it's always difficult, as Laurie was saying earlier, these are things that you need to do, but that can start to impose on women and on victims of this that they're doing something wrong if it happens.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we both would want to make clear that this is advice that ideally you will take, but if you can't manage it or if you haven't done it in the past, it's still none of it's your fault that it's happened.
No,
it's always
absolutely
the fault of the person who's doing it.
100%.
Yeah. But anyway, this is some fairly sensible and fairly standard advice for sexual harassment as a freelancer. Because it is slightly more difficult as a freelancer because you're not an employee.
Mm-hmm.
The situation's different. Anyway, number one, avoid one-on-one situations.
That's difficult, isn't it? Straight off.
Yeah. Exactly. But so say you're going to have a business lunch with someone, then either suggest they bring someone along with them or bring someone along yourself.
Yeah.
It's got to be someone who can add value to the meeting, or you know, not just like your mate.
My neighbour. She looks after my dog sometimes.
Exactly. So yeah, but as far as you can, avoid one-on-one situations.
Yeah, you might, if you have no one else to bring along, you might be able to suggest that you have a Skype meeting instead.
Yep.
Or just meet them somewhere busy. Maybe what I tend to do is go for breakfast meetings rather than dinner meetings.
Yeah.
Because I just find that I'm more comfortable with breakfast meetings. They can't really be misconstrued by somebody who's looking to misconstrue something.
They're unlikely to have too much wine with it.
Yes, and it gives you a good excuse to leave.
Yeah. Point number two, clearly decline all advances. Some of this advice is a bit questionable because it talks about sending mixed messages and things, whereas we do know that people who are sexual harassers don't do it because they're getting mixed messages. They do,
they do it because they're looking for mixed messages to get.
Exactly. They're doing it because they have a point to prove, or they are feeling undermined, or they're just aggressive and rude and enjoy having that power over people. So while I agree that certainly clearly decline all advances, I'm skeptical of some of their reasoning on this particular site. Mm-hmm. However, it suggests things like let your client know that you're in a committed relationship. Again, you might not want to bring private life into it, but alternatively, if you don't mind doing that, or even if you lie about it, that can help to ward off unwelcome advances.
Definitely. I mean, you may feel like, well, you know, they shouldn't be doing this, even if I have a husband or a boyfriend or a girlfriend.
Yep.
Or a wife, you know, they shouldn't be doing this to me and it shouldn't matter. But we're talking about things that if you feel comfortable doing them, if you want to do them, if it makes your life easier to say that you have a partner or to lie and say that you have a partner, then you shouldn't feel guilty about that. It still doesn't make it your responsibility.
Yeah.
You don't have to do any of this stuff, and it doesn't justify their behaviour at all.
Yeah.
But if this helps you, by all means.
Exactly. Point number three, keep records. Now, this is pretty important. Laurie mentioned it earlier for other situations, and it's important for this as well. If you write down every time something happens, even if it feels like quite a small thing, if something makes you feel uncomfortable, write down when it happened, the date and the time, where it happened, exactly what happened.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe have another column for how it made you feel or anything you noticed, or just notes. But if you've got everything listed in a notebook, then if you do need to escalate the situation and talk to their superior or make an official complaint or anything like that, this is something that will really make a difference to your case. Point number four is decide whether or not to report it. If it's a one-off incident, you're never going to have to deal with the person again. You might choose not to. That's fine. Alternatively, you might think, well, I'm never going to deal with them again, but other women will, and so I want to report it anyway.
Yeah.
Entirely up to you. If it's more of an ongoing situation, then I think there's probably more motivation to report it, to try and just stop it happening, really. Okay. As always, it's your choice.
Yes. You don't have a responsibility to act in a certain way.
Yeah.
So whatever you're comfortable with, if you want to report it, go ahead. If you don't feel that you're able to, that's okay.
Yeah. And point number five is be prepared to walk away. They say, finally, if the behaviour doesn't stop, be prepared to walk away. Believe me, even if this is a big client or if you're a struggling entrepreneur, it's better to miss out on a business opportunity than to risk your comfort.
Thank you for leaving reputation out there.
Well, I know.
That's what made me go, ooh.
I know. There's no issue with, there shouldn't be an issue with your, listeners, what the document actually says is it's better to miss out on a business opportunity than to risk your reputation or comfort. Now, I missed out reputation because I think that's fully wrong, because if you are sexually harassed,
you're not some tainted person.
Yeah, it's
for
not
that.
Your
it's
reputation
not your
behavior at risk. It's somebody else's reputation at risk. And so, yes, so I stand by their advice in that last point, but only when I'm talking about your comfort, not your reputation.
Definitely, because being harassed can be extremely stressful, and it usually is extremely stressful because it's designed to make you feel uncomfortable.
Yeah.
That's the whole thing about harassment. So while it's happening and afterwards, you'd be questioning yourself, worried, concerned, perhaps feeling a little bit violated, upset, angry.
Yeah.
It brings out so many things in you, and you have to decide if this person won't stop what they're doing and you can't find a decent route to a solution, I would support that fully, that it is better to walk away. And it's, we're not saying it's always easy, because that might be a very important client to you. It might be really important in terms of finances, and it's a bitch, let's be honest. It's a complete kick in the teeth. It's not fair. It's not right. But all you can decide is who you're going to deal with.
Yeah, my advice, like Laurie says, we know this isn't ideal. If somebody's bringing in 50% of your income, it's hard to drop them. But ideally, I would say that your well-being is far more important.
Mm-hmm.
And there are other clients. If you drop this client, it gives you the opportunity to find others and maintain for yourself your comfort and well-being.
Even after years and years and years of freelancing, Pip and I both still have moments where we are basically feeling gaslighted. You know, I'll email Pip and say, Pip, you know, somebody said this, and I'm just, is this weird? Is this inappropriate? Like, is that okay? And Pip will be like, oh my God, that's horrible. I'll be like, oh, I thought so, whoops.
Yeah, because it can be really tricky. You don't know if you're being oversensitive or...
Especially when it's you. Like, you'd be a lot kinder to another woman or another man than you would be to yourself.
And it's so much easier to spot in other people. If Laurie, you know, forwards me an email and says, is this okay? I can tell instantly whether it is or it isn't. Whereas if it's an email that I receive, I might need to check that out with somebody, because it's harder because you're emotionally involved.
Yeah, the closer you are, the harder it is to see the big picture.
Yeah. Now, another way to deal with this kind of situation is to disagree or challenge it straight on.
So, when a client is behaving condescendingly towards you, I mean, this doesn't apply so much to sexual harassment, but more patronising behaviour and undermining you.
Yeah.
You can take it a step further than just ignoring the tone and continuing the conversation by actively disagreeing with what they're saying.
Yeah.
Now, this is an immediate, direct coping method. And speaking from my own experience, I had a client with whom I didn't get on well at all. He would constantly speak down to me. He would talk over me. He would refer to my work in degrading ways, saying things like, well, go and tweet or whatever it is that you do. I was so furious that I got straight back to him on the phone.
Yeah.
Hiding behind email. And I completely disagreed with him. No shouting, no abuse, just the fact. And by unpicking the argument bit by logical bit, he just had nowhere to go. He was disciplined internally, and I actually never had to deal with him again.
And sometimes that's how it has to be. And so what we've looked at is in those ways of reacting to this kind of either patch, you know, anything on the spectrum from being patronized to being outright harassed, we've looked at proving them wrong, doing such a good job that they stop being skeptical about your abilities. We have looked at being more direct, challenging someone directly, perhaps with a little bit of sarcasm in there, or perhaps just by laying out the facts.
Mm-hmm.
And then we've looked at things like avoiding certain situations, making a note of every situation that occurs, reporting or not, walking away, and also directly challenging the client. So what we want to look at now is some of the more indirect. This is more coping methods rather than how to handle a situation. This is more at the end of the day when you get in a hot bath and you feel really bothered by what's happened. That's this bit.
That is definitely this bit. Now, the first point that we want to touch on is self-care.
Yeah.
And you cannot overestimate the importance of self-care. Self-care is, it does what it says on the tin, it's looking after yourself. and making sure that you are okay. And when you're a freelancer, that is particularly important. I'm not going to say it's not important for salaried people or anyone else, because it's hugely important for all of us.
Yeah.
But in pure business terms, when you're a freelancer or a sole trader, you are your business.
Yeah, when I had flu a few weeks ago, Laurie had to very firmly tell me to stop working.
Yeah.
Because despite how ill I was, I felt this massive responsibility to my clients. It felt risky to just stop working, and it took somebody else, in this case Laurie, because we work so closely together in many ways, to tell me to stop in a way that I kind of took some kind of permission from.
Yeah.
But in other workspaces, if I'd been that ill and gone to work, I would have been sent home.
Absolutely. And I think it's terrifying, isn't it? Because when you're a freelancer and you stop working, you shut your business down.
Yeah. It is really scary. Yeah.
Yeah. And it can be really scary.
So those kinds of things can be harder when you're a freelancer to implement, really.
Definitely. And that brings us on to the first point of self-care that we want to talk about, which is getting support from other people.
Yeah.
You know, whether it's a fellow freelancer, whether it's a friend or a partner or a parent or a family member, or whether you go on a freelancer's forum and say, do you know what, everyone, I've just had the shittiest day ever. This is what's happened. It's been horrible. I don't know what to do.
Yeah.
You know, there are ways. And feeling less isolated is an extremely good way, an extremely effective way to take the hot air out of a very unpleasant balloon.
Yeah.
And just deflate the situation a little bit and let you know, it grounds you back in reality.
Yeah.
And it lets you know that this person isn't all powerful. It's not the most important thing in the world.
Yeah.
Even if they're one of your most important clients now, you'll probably forget them in a few years.
Yeah.
If you have to get rid of them, it's okay. You're not on your own. You know, if you're being treated badly by someone who's chauvinist or you're being sexually harassed, you can be okay. They're not powerful over you.
And the real advantage of that kind of external validation is it helps you to put things in perspective.
Definitely.
If you've been, you know, if you've spent 8 hours having a back and forth with a patronizing client somewhere,
mm-hmm.
then going out for a drink with some friends that evening will just remind you that there are other things in the world. When they talk about their kids' latest adventure or their boss's latest scandal, or
they may laugh at it, they may laugh at the story that you tell them, and you may realize just how ridiculous the person is.
Definitely. Yeah,
that sometimes helps. You know, you can have that ranty turning into a laugh moment.
Yeah.
Where you're just going, God, I just hate this person so much and it's so ridiculous. And then you find yourself laughing because you just think, why am I even in this situation? And it can really help.
Yeah.
Because as we've said at the start of this podcast, you can't control other people's behaviour. You can only control your own and the way that you deal with things. So while you can't stop someone being a complete muppet towards you, you can change the way that you view it if that helps you.
Yeah. Now, other ways to implement some self-care strategies are kind of cliched, but that's probably because they're quite effective.
True.
If you've got, you know, family demanding meals and a wash, and just lock yourself in the bathroom, have a long hot bath, have a glass of wine if that's your thing. Give yourself an hour to pamper yourself, or go and have a massage once a week or once a fortnight. Or if you're super busy, just a concerted, deliberate break for a really nice cup of tea.
Mm-hmm. Hot chocolate's my favourite.
Yeah, can really help.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, if you say to yourself, I'm taking 15 minutes for a break because I deserve a 15-minute break.
Yeah.
It's about the state of mind that you're in. You know, and I think you need to be kind to yourself. When someone else is being unkind to you, you need to take responsibility and think, would I let this person treat a friend that way? Would I let this person treat a family member that way?
That's always a very telling thought exercise. You know, if you think, if this is happening to my sister, what would I advise her?
Yeah.
Or if this is happening to my best friend, would I think it was okay? You get a real clarity then.
Yeah, absolutely. Because we're often a lot less kind to ourselves than we are to other people.
Yeah.
Because it's hard, you know, we internalise the messages that we receive and we think, gosh, I really must be a bad freelancer. And that brings me on to another point. If you have one client who's treating you like dirt and you have other clients who are happy, have a chat to your other clients, not about the situation, but phone them up. Phone them up for a catch-up. Say, how are things going? And soak up those positive messages.
It's a way to remind yourself that you deserve to be treated respectfully.
Absolutely. Phone another client who's pleasant to you. Yep. Shoot the breeze with them. They'll appreciate you getting in touch with them and saying, is everything okay? Is there anything else you need from me? How are things? You know, how was the kids' school play? Shoot the breeze a little bit and then talk business with them a little bit. Say to them, oh, I've just noticed this latest legislation. Give them your energy instead of spending the energy. And I'm not saying this works in every case. Sometimes, obviously, if the situation's really bad, this isn't going to apply. But if the situation's just getting on your nerves and really winding you up, you can sometimes take that energy and re-divert it into giving a different client really excellent extra customer service.
Yes.
And that can not just make you feel better, that can have positive results as well.
Yeah.
You may remind a client that's not been in touch for a while that, oh, you know, I have a special deal going on at the moment for press releases, or how's your web content looking? Have you thought any more about having a blog? Mm-hmm. There are ways and means, and just having a nice chat with somebody will remind you that you are a professional, you are a human being, and you deserve to be treated with respect.
Yeah. Now, if you find you might go through those thought exercises, or you might just think about it a lot and realise that you are being treated badly, but you might not feel that you've got any confidence really to stick up for yourself.
What you can do in these situations is that you can investigate either formal or informal assertiveness training.
Yeah.
Or confidence building is another good route to take.
Yeah.
Now, there are organisations and people out there who offer this as a specific skill. And if you're a woman freelancer, there are people out there, women consultants out there, who will offer this specifically for women and the challenges that women face.
Mm-hmm.
So there will be somebody out there or an organisation out there that's a good fit for you.
When I was at university, during World Mental Health Week, there were a series of workshops that were provided, and one was an assertiveness training for women workshop that I went to, and it was only like an hour. It wasn't like any kind of intensive
mm-hmm.
thing, but mainly what I remember is that there was this one exercise where we just went round the group and everybody had to shout no.
I like that.
And
I bet it was really embarrassing and really scary, actually.
Well, the thing was, this was a group of, you know, university-educated women, reasonably privileged in that respect, reasonably confident to have got that far, and yet nearly all of us found it hard.
Yeah, I'll bet.
To shout no. And that wasn't even to somebody. It wasn't in a difficult situation. But right after being given permission to shout no, we all kind of cringed a bit. And it for me, really highlighted how much...
Yeah, that is powerful.
Yeah, we really try to be accommodating.
No, we really, really do. And it may be that you are in the fortunate position of being able to invest in some personalised assertiveness and confidence training. It may be that you're not in a position, in which case, have a look online, see if there are any women's networking events in your local area, if you're a woman, if there are any confidence building events, if you're not a woman, or if you don't particularly want to go for a gender separate.
Sure.
Event, or if you're not particularly confident with things like that, there are assertiveness exercises that you can find. If you just search online and have a look for confidence building exercises and surround yourself with positive people, surround yourself with people that you feel an affinity with, whether that's online or in person.
There is a book that we were recommended on that training that I read at the time and that was very well respected, and it's called A Woman in Your Own Right, Assertiveness and You, and mm-hmm. it's by a woman called Anne Dixon, mm-hmm. and I will put a link to that in the show notes, because Although it's many years now since I read it, I remember it being very good and it came very highly recommended.
Well, it's clearly had an impression on you, given that you can cite the title and the author.
Yeah, and the cover is silver, which is always a bonus.
All right, you're
shiny
showing off
silver,
now.
I know.
It's worth a look.
Yeah. So as we mentioned earlier, there are times when it is better to cut and run. It's better to cut your losses and just say, no, I am not working with this individual or this company anymore.
Yeah, and I think it's important at this stage to say, although we have given a lot of advice and a lot of coping methods, if you have a one-off incident with one person and you think, I cannot realistically cope with working with this person again,
mm-hmm.
if you want to cut and run immediately,
do it.
Then yeah. do it.
It's all about, we're not telling you, if you're in this situation, you must do A, B, and C. We're providing as many options as we can, really, because it's a terribly tricky situation. And so if half of what we say makes no sense to you, but the other half does, stick with what makes sense to you.
Definitely. Stick with what you're comfortable with. You know, and although it's not ideal to cut and run from somebody in a situation, sometimes somebody will do something that you simply think is unacceptable and leaves you nowhere to go.
Yeah.
In which case, then your answer is clear.
Now, a time you might want to do this is just if it becomes unbearable. And maybe that's one incident, maybe it's ongoing incidents.
Mm-hmm.
But if you get to a point where you're dreading the phone ringing, or you're dreading getting an email from somebody, or you're dreading a meeting you have to go to, that you shouldn't, you need to get out of that situation, frankly.
Yeah, feeling nervous or negative is okay. You know,
yeah.
we all get a bit down in the dumps and a bit anxious sometimes.
Yeah.
Or I think most of us do. But when you are actively dreading any interaction with this company or this person, it's time to really assess whether there's anything to be done or whether you should just cut and run.
Yeah.
Because it's important to prioritise your health and your well-being.
Yeah.
As we said before, Pip and I are not flippant about money. We've both been in situations where we are living hand-to-mouth.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've been in situations where life has not been secure at all.
Yeah.
So we don't speak from a position of particular privilege in that situation. But money is not everything. If you need to go and see about what benefits you can claim,
mm-hmm.
if you get rid of that client, then do that. If you need to talk about getting a loan, then look into that. While it's not ideal to get rid of a client if you need the money, you cannot put a price on your health and your well-being. And if you feel like those are seriously being damaged by interactions with this client and there's nothing else you can do, it may well be time to cut and run.
Yeah. It's because you can replace clients. There will be always another million companies needing a writer. Always.
And there will. You will feel like there aren't, but there are.
Whereas what you can't replace is your mental health. That's much harder to fix if things become so bad. You know, this isn't something to mess about with.
Absolutely. So what we will end on really is just that it's a good idea to keep your business development ticking over. Even if you love the clients that you've got, even if you don't want more clients, it's always good to have a finger on the pulse when it comes mm-hmm. to business development, because then you don't feel quite so powerless.
Yeah, it's one of those things we've said a lot. Marketing has to be fairly consistent because things change all the time.
Absolutely.
You know, a few weeks ago, a couple of big pieces of work came to an end because they were big, but they weren't ongoing.
So fixed term project.
Yeah. So it accounted for a lot of my income for a while, but then the two big projects both just came to an end at a similar mm-hmm. time. And that's the kind of situation where you don't want, when they've come to an end, to suddenly go, oh, I need new clients now. You need to have been doing that throughout. And this is another reason why that's good advice.
Absolutely. And you need to be able to respect yourself. And I would never, never say or even think that there's anything disrespectful about being sexually harassed or talked down to. That does not affect you or yourself at all. That's not about you. That's about the harasser.
Yeah.
But if you find that the only reason you are staying in contact with and working for a client is because you have nowhere else to go and you have no other clients to rely on for your income, and if you find that you are allowing certain behaviours or taking certain behaviours from somebody else simply because you need the money, it's a very, very good reason to start looking seriously for other clients. And I can recommend LinkedIn. I can recommend Twitter.
Yeah.
If you need to get yourself on one of the freelancing sites, then it's better than nothing.
Yeah.
If you need to contact marketing agencies to see if they want to outsource any work to you, if you need to go and talk to temping agencies, if you need to have a look for part-time or full-time salaried employment, it is all better than subjecting yourself or allowing someone else to subject you to behaviour that is damaging to you, and you shouldn't have to put up with that.
You might be listening to this from a male point of view or as a client, and so what we want to finish with is just some thoughts on how what men can do to make sure that they're not being one of those guys that actually makes people around them feel uncomfortable. I remember I was walking home one evening and it was a bit dark and I was in a bit of a side street and there was a man walking behind me, and as a woman I was very, very aware of that, of my safety. And I got home and I asked on Twitter, first of all, women, would you feel threatened in this situation? And pretty much exclusively everybody said yes. And then I asked men, in this situation, would you be aware that you're being perceived as threatening? And most had never thought about it.
No, I imagine they wouldn't, because it's a sad state of affairs, isn't it?
Yeah. And so it's important to start thinking about situations that you may not perceive as potentially threatening, but just reframing a bit in your mind and just double checking whether actually you might be making someone feel uncomfortable. Do you ever kind of protectively put your arm around someone's shoulder when you don't know them that well?
Mm-hmm.
Do you make jokes that may be a bit risky? Because some people are deliberate harassers. Some people are clear misogynists who enjoy making women feel bad. But a lot of these situations as well, it may be you. It may not have occurred to you that you're being patronizing. It may not have occurred to you that actually insisting that someone goes for a drink with you is actually pushy and intimidating.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's a good idea to check your behaviour
and
say, particularly in the case of friendly overtures, to say, would I do this to a guy?
Definitely.
Would I had a situation, I explained to Pip before we started recording, I had a situation where I went on like a recce mission. I went to see some new equipment that a client had, and a member of staff there tickled me on my breast.
Everything is wrong with that.
Everything is wrong. I'm nearly 30. I'm a professional.
Yeah.
I'm also not his hand puppet.
No, quite. So,
there couldn't be more wrong with that situation. But the immediate thought I had is that you would not do that to a man.
No.
You'd get punched.
Yeah.
You know, if you suddenly start tickling a male colleague under his arm, you know, or, you know, supposed to give a more equivalent, to give a closer equivalent, tickling him somewhere sensitive.
Yeah.
You just wouldn't get away with it. You wouldn't do it. And I don't know to this day whether he was being pervy or whether he was just being weirdly paternalistic, because he's much older than me. And he was doing this kind of it's all a joke thing.
Yeah.
But I gave him a dirty look and I moved away and I made it clear that I wasn't happy with physical contact. But he may have just thought he was being friendly. Yeah.
Another thing to look out for, if you're not sure whether your behaviour makes people uncomfortable, is do women avoid being alone with you?
True.
Or is there a bit of a, do you have a bit of a reputation? Things like that can actually tell you a lot.
Definitely, definitely they can. And I think as long as you're aware you're probably doing better than a lot of people.
Yeah.
As long as you're aware. And there's nothing to stop you saying, if you think something was a bit awkward, there's nothing to stop you saying, I hope everything's okay. I didn't mean anything by that comment. I'm sorry if it came out wrong.
Yep.
You know, it's good to be able to diffuse these situations, but make sure that you check your own behaviour before putting things on somebody else. And you're likely to get on quite well. And I think if you've got good intentions, then I don't know many people who won't give you at least the benefit of the doubt on the first few occasions if you have good intentions and if it's clear that you do.
Yeah.
Everyone can be a bit socially awkward sometimes. So what we're not suggesting is that you start handling women with oven gloves and kind of like, oh, I cannot be alone with this woman in case she thinks I'm harassing her.
Yeah.
It's good to be comfortable with people and friendly with people. Make sure that you're not singling women out for treatment that you wouldn't apply to men.
Yeah, definitely. And if you do get some feedback that's a bit hard to take, don't automatically dismiss it. Actually listen and question yourself.
Absolutely, because, you know, I know we've talked a lot about men and women today because that's obviously Pip and I are both women.
Mm-hmm.
And it's something that really does happen. You know, it's a big issue when it comes to the workplace, but there are of course other dimensions to this. There are people with disabilities, there are people who are gay, people who are trans, people who are not white.
Mm-hmm.
And we can all muck up sometimes.
Of course
we can all muck up, we can all cause offense, and it's never nice to hear it. Nobody's immune to it. It's never nice to hear it, but you have to listen to what you're being told.
Yeah, if somebody offends me and I tell them why, and they start defending themselves without thinking, then that's annoying. If they say, I'm really sorry, I hadn't thought that through, I won't do it again, then that's that. It's fixed.
Yeah, it's the end of it. I have very good friends and very friendly online acquaintances and very friendly work acquaintances who have previously said or done something that I find massively objectionable.
Mm.
But if it's been dealt with, you move on.
Yeah.
So to sum up, the aim of this podcast isn't to teach you how to wrestle an apology from somebody or to force them to become the kind of person you want to be best friends with. The objective here is to just nip any damaging behaviour in your working environment in the bud.
Yeah.
And move on, if possible, to have a friendly and dignified, nice working relationship.
Essentially, what you want is a working relationship that doesn't demean or insult you. You want it to work in a way that you're able to thrive and get on with your work in the way you do best. Like Laurie says, you don't need to socialise with difficult clients or turn them into a feminist activist. You just want the best professional relationship you can muster.
Absolutely. And if getting a rude, irritating, patronising or otherwise pain in the proverbial client to apologise is really important to you, it's worth reassessing your priorities, frankly. Because from experience, it's not realistic and it's not sensible to go chasing an apology from a client, even just one who's been slightly annoying. So if you up the ante and talk about clients who are actively chauvinist or patronising, you're probably not going to get a wholehearted apology. Instead, just focus on trying to get better behaviour from them in future.
Yeah. And so now it is time for the Little Bird recommendation of the week, in which Laurie and I mention something that we've spotted and thought might be of interest. So, Ms. Hartshorn, what is your recommendation this week?
Well, Ms. Willits, my recommendation this week is just a nice, cute, interesting infographic.
Mm-hmm.
Spotted. It's called Online in 60 Seconds, and it says, on the internet, we all know things can move at a lightning fast pace. In just a minute, you can read through and compose a few tweets along with look at dozens of Facebook photos. That said, we've pulled together this infographic to give you an updated view of everything that happens online in 60 seconds during 2013. Now, I think that's slightly optimistic. It's not everything that happens online.
No.
But it's a very nice infographic. It's set up like a wheel or a clock. It's got a little stopwatch in the middle. And in each segment, there is a different social media platform or different online activity.
Mm-hmm.
And it outlines exactly what goes on in 1 minute for that platform or website. So we have email, 204 million emails are sent every minute.
Most of them come to me.
Most of them don't come to me, thank goodness. I'm glad you're taking the lion's share of those. 278,000 tweets, again, most of which probably go to Pip.
Yeah.
Or come from Pip. Professional searches. I thought it just said 11 then. I was like, oh, that's really bad. LinkedIn, 11,000 professional searches per month. I wouldn't have been surprised if it had been 11, because I love to hate LinkedIn.
Indeed.
It's super useful, but it's my nemesis. Skype, as we're on Skype at the moment, 1.4 million minutes connecting with each other.
To be fair, I'd imagine it's 0.4 million calls and 1 million people trying to get it to work.
True, 1.4 million people going, can you hear me?
Hello?
What's that, what?
571 new websites created every minute. That's
yes,
quite scary.
Yeah, I just really liked it. I really, really liked it.
The only thing that's slightly bugging me about it is that all the segments are the same size. So you've got 2 million Google searches.
You're such a purist.
I know. 2 million Google searches is exactly the same as 14 new Spotify songs added.
They're supposed to be clock minutes.
I know, like, but it's annoying me anyway.
But are they so technical? Goodness sake. Well, you know, Laurie, that's a nice recommendation, but I have a bone to pick. Well, whatever your recommendation is, I'm not going to like it either.
However, the information is very interesting.
No, you ruined it now.
It's gone.
Your recommendation's gone.
Now, I changed my recommendation at the last minute. I had found a very interesting blog post. But then I saw on Twitter a link to a site that seemed very interesting, and I signed up in the kind of half hour before we started recording. Now, this is a website called ShareGrab, and it's potentially really useful for your social media marketing.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what ShareGrab does is you sign up with your Facebook account and then you input some Facebook pages from either your main competitors or from incredibly successful Facebook pages in your field. And what ShareGrab does then is analyze the posts from all those places and tells you which got the most views, which got the most shares, which got the most comments.
Oh, you're so smart.
So that you can get, if you need some inspiration about what to post, or if you're finding that your Facebook posts aren't really getting reactions, you can start to analyse other people's success in your field and get some ideas, basically. And it, like I said, I signed up, but I haven't had the chance to really do anything with it yet. But it came recommended by Ian Cleary, who is very good on social media tools. Mm-hmm. And it looks like it could be potentially really interesting and really useful.
Definitely, no. I mean, were I not committed to loathing you for all eternity at this point, I would actually probably sign up.
Yeah.
Obviously, I won't now.
No.
Dissed my recommendation.
And it's free as well, which is always good.
No interest to me. And so, now that Philippa has outdone my recommendation again, that brings us to the end of episode 60. Whether there'll be an episode 61, who knows? Maybe the dynamic duo are over. Maybe it's all finished.
And while Laurie gets all dramatic, I also want to ask, are you doing NaNoWriMo?
Yes! No, I'll leave aside our massive feud.
Yes.
It's over now. Okay, we're done. I've forgiven you. We do NaNoWriMo. We've heard from people who are.
Yes, if you are, or if you're even considering it, go to alittlebirdtoldme.podomatic.com, scroll down to episode 58, where we did a whole episode going into real detail about how to cope, frankly, with the ridiculously awesome task of writing a novel in a month. If you're doing it, go to episode 58, have a listen, share it on your blog, share it on Facebook and Twitter, because it's as we record, it's the end of October, and this episode will come out in early November, so you may well have made a start.
It's exciting, and if you do need some support throughout the month, we have a Facebook page. It's facebook.com/freelancewritingpodcast, so you can always come along and air your worries and share your cares with us, and we will do our best to keep you going, just like caffeine, all the way through November until you have a 50,000 word novel.
Well, exactly. And so that is it for episode 60. Do head over to our website at alittlebirdtoldme.podomatic.com for all the links we've talked about today, for a link to the assertiveness book we mentioned, and of course to subscribe to the podcast, because you know you don't want to miss our next one.
Yeah, you have to tune in next week to find out if we're still friends.
Or if one of us has murdered the other yet. Mind you, it's a solo episode next week.
Wow.
So it will be Laurie, and you'll have to still...
quickly.
Yeah, you'll have to still worry about whether I survived or not.
Don't worry, she won't. No, we're playing. We're super, super good friends.
We are.
Because I'm scared of her.
That's true.
Thank you so much for listening. Thank you for tuning in. We love recording this for you, and we hope that you enjoy it. We've had some lovely feedback from people over my email address. So if you would like to hear us again next week, follow Pip's advice, tune in, subscribe, come and have a nosy at littlebirdtoldme.podomatic.com. And in the meantime, I've been Laurie Hartthorne.
And I have been Philippa Willett, and we will see you next time.